Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning. So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at WLIW.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. Each show is archived on my website at AnneLiguori.com and distributed on my podcast via Audio Boom and iTunes. I'm in Rome, Italy, at Marco Simoni Golf Course, the venue for the Ryder Cup, the biennial international competition between the United States and Europe. The three-day event features foursome and four-ball matches on Friday and Saturday and singles matches on Sunday. It's been 30 years since the U.S. has won on European soil, although in 2021 at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin, the U.S. team dominated Europe 19-9. And then in 2016 at Hazeltine in Minnesota, the U.S. won 17-11. There are four rookies on each of the teams this year and several controversial captain's picks. But say what you'd like about each team of 12, the Ryder Cup has become one of the biggest and most exciting international sports competitions on the planet. This morning, I preview this Ryder Cup, the first time Italy is hosting. And Matt Adams, who works with NBC Sports, the Golf Channel, and Fairways of Life, he's one of the broadcasters on the World International feed here. He'll join me, and I will share the interview sessions with both Rory McIlroy, the biggest star on the European team, and Brooks Koepka, perhaps the most controversial star on Team USA based on his LIV Golf connection. Either way, you'll get to know a little bit more about these two personalities through these press conferences. Hope you enjoy this edition of Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Matt Adams, Fairways of Life, NBC, the Golf Channel, working here at Marco Simoni at the 2023 Ryder Cup for the World Radio Feed. And Matt, it's a pleasure to always run into you. You are a golf historian extraordinaire, and I've always loved your work. And it just must be thrilling for you to be at yet another Ryder Cup.
Yeah, it's cool. It's good to see you. And this event, I think in particular this year in 2023, this Ryder Cup has more weight to it, and I mean it from the perspective of what I think this Ryder Cup means to the game. It's always important. It's always about a celebration of golf, ultimately, right? Even though in our various capacities and even as fans, we focus on wins and losses. That's the nature of sport. But this event is meant to be hands across the water. It's meant to be an embracing of each other around the shoulders. And there's that element of celebration that we see at every Ryder Cup, which is classic today. I was assigned early, because we're on the air right now, I was assigned early to the American team's practice. So they were going off number one. And it was clearly a partisan crowd. It was 99% American fans that were surrounding the first tee. And you know, the players would take their practice swings and the crowd would applaud and cheer them on. And then there was one guy on the upper left-hand side that after the practice swing was over, they would, four left, you know, wherever he was from. But he was the one guy that was representing the other side. So it was that kind of funny stuff happens all the time. But I just think in general with everything that's surrounding the game right now, with the turmoil that the game's been in for the last, year and a half or so, that this Ryder Cup feels more important. It feels like it's meant to be a time, just like we got at the four major championships this year, when it's really about the game. And it's not about what's going on outside the ropes. It's about what's going on inside the ropes. And for that, I think it's just one more reason why the enthusiasm and excitement level is so high.
Absolutely. And you know, you're talking about what's going on outside the ropes with LIV and with the PGA Tour and the Saudi supposed partnership. And all that divisiveness and division that's been going on in the game for the last year or two. But here, quite the opposite with the European team and the U.S. team, because so many of these guys go to school, the European guys go to school in the United States. Some of them even talk more Southern and U.S. than
that. Yes. Yeah, Sepp Straka, yes, I know what you mean.
He's not an Austrian, is he? And, you know, it's funny because you don't feel like there's this them against us mentality that only the Ryder Cup brings out, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's part of the celebratory portion of this. And they'll have dinners together this week and the gala affairs and all the rest. But once the competition starts, it is interesting because even Justin Thomas was talking about this the other day in his press conference when he said, you know, I'm great friends with Rory McIlroy, but when we're on the golf course, we hate each other. For those 18 holes, we hate each other. So there will be a fevered pitch of competitive fire, notwithstanding the fact that the vast majority of them play the same tour and play together often, and many of them live near each other, particularly in South Florida, and play practice rounds and more. There will come a time on Friday and Friday morning when all of that ends, when the niceties are over and the cutthroat competition begins.
Wasn't it JT who said, well, even if his wife was playing, he'd be against her? So that's the competitive spirit we're looking for.
Yes, he did say that. True. Very true.
So what are your initial thoughts of Marco Simone? I had the opportunity to play here in March, and I love the course for a match play kind of format with the elevation and the reachable par fours and the really tricky par threes. And, of course, it looks much different, I must say, all these months later than it did in March. The course looks like it's in tremendous shape. The rough is high and the greens look flawless. But overall, walking the course and studying Marco Simone, how do you view this course as a venue for this Ryder Cup?
The golf course itself strikes me as an American-style golf course, in fairness. It has tremendous undulations, and I'm curious if people that are listening to us perhaps back in North America get that or see that when they watch it on television, because the hills are very, very high here and the valleys are very, very deep. So fitness is actually going to come into question. Normally you look at these world-class athletes and say, well, what do they have to do worrying about fitness? They play golf all the time, but it's going to wear people down because of it. The green complexes themselves, it's bent grass in the green, it's paspalum and the fairways. The greens, in my view, are just a little bit overdone, meaning that there's greens within greens within greens. There's sections of greens where they can cut the pins. It's very undulating with that. It looks a bit like a potato chip, which I always say when I see greens like that, I think green complexes are where an architect's insecurities are revealed. The architects don't like to hear me say that, but I do feel that way. I feel like an architect, it's a little worried about length or accessibility or scoreability, and they kind of beef up the green complexes more. So that will be a factor. Putting is always a factor in the Ryder Cup, but add in those extra elements of complication, and I think it's going to become even more paramount that putting is something that everybody has, you know, a good handle on if you hope to win your respective matches. Other than that, the way that they built the green complexes, it's very much from that standpoint, to go back to a Donald Ross concept where you'll often find, I'll give you right out of the gate, number one, where the tee box is way below the green. So they're using the natural contours that the architect will look at it and go, okay, well, if I've got a hill, I'm going to put a green on top of that hill. And if I have to use behind it, like obviously the tee box for two is going to be on the same side of that hill, then they're going to be hitting down into a valley, you know, and then back up to another green. So I think it's absolutely fascinating, and it goes to what you just said, and that from a match play perspective, I think you're going to see wild swings, because not only is this golf course about precision and strategy, this golf course is also about an element of luck when you get up around the greens.
And as you mentioned, the undulation, but have I also heard they're a little slower, perhaps, than these players might be used to, or no?
I don't know for certain, but I would tell you yes from the perspective of the European side, which Luke Donald has the right to set it up any way he wants to, they always slow down the greens. I mean, that's standard. And that may seem counterintuitive to some people listening, because they'll say, well, wait a minute, they all play the same tour. They're all used to playing fast greens. But for the European players, most of them grew up playing slower greens. So even though they may play at faster greens now, it's going to be presumably a little easier to adjust for a player that had his formative years on slower greens. And so the typical setup, and I've seen some of it, I'll give you an example of it in a second, where they grow the rough up, and in where it's particularly heavy, to go back to my old golf operations side, is what we call overspray. And the overspray is when you have water from irrigation of the fairways and fertilizer from feeding the same overspray into the rough, which is anywhere from, call it what, it's inside of 20 feet, maybe 10 feet, and the closer you are to the fairway cut itself, the thicker it gets. So if you miss a fairway out here by 3 feet, you're in a situation where you're probably going to hack it out about 90 yards at the most, right, with sand wedge. If you miss it by beyond 20 feet or more, if you're not held up by the rare trees that are out here, then you could have a really good lie. It's really ironic that it has gone that way, but that's a very typical setup. Now, to give you an example of what I'm talking about, I was on the second hole, with the group that I was just following. Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele, Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka was the last. And Cantlay missed the fairway on the right. He was maybe 10 feet away from Brooks Koepka, who was on the extreme right of the fairway. He couldn't move the ball forward. He had to go sideways, and he did exactly what I said. He went out about 90 yards, and it was, again, raised green complex. There were all kinds of complications there, but it just shows you what can happen in that scenario where you really have to be careful with your driving, which goes down to strategy.
Accuracy off the tee at a premium, and you mentioned the word hack, which we hopefully won't see, but with this rough, we're going to see it out there because the rough is brutal.
Yeah, you're definitely going to see it. It reminds me of when we were at France, Le Golf National, and it was a very similar setup. It was a similar golf course, save that this one has more undulations, and the green complexes are more severe. However, just the way that the course kind of meandered around its natural surroundings, they just reminded me of each other. So, what I saw was more of a philosophical difference, where, for example, on Sunday, I was assigned to follow Brooks Koepka versus Paul Casey. And we were on the sixth hole, fairly short, fairly straightaway, slightly dogleg left, par four. Paul Casey gets up there with a hybrid and pops it right out into the middle of the fairway. And Brooks Koepka gets up there with the driver and smashes this driver. And as he's done most of the week, pulled it left. He was in some very, very thick rough. From there, he had to hack his way out. So it comes down to that kind of philosophy of, if you try to impose your will on this golf course, you will pay a price for it. This golf course is more about a chess game than it is about brawn.
So having said that, with all these nuances of the course, trickiness, the challenges, who do you think it favors?
Oh, right now, I think it favors the European side, and that's exactly what they're intending to do. Now, having said that, they're all playing the same course. They're all playing the same hole. So, again, it comes down to what I call a matter of philosophy and strategy versus going in and playing the game that you always play, which is I always just smash it as far as I possibly can, find it, wedge it, and go. So I think that's the key thing that we have to keep an eye on is early, and you're going to see it straight away. I'll tell you what, again, I'll use number one to give people an example as they're listening to this and then perhaps watching the Ryder Cup later on. You can hit a driver on number one. And on number one, I watched every player on the American team get ready today, and half of them hit drivers and half of them hit three woods. And the one that got in trouble on number one was Brooks Koepka. He smashed his driver and it went way right, and he had trouble with a second shot on there. So it's just interesting. Can you get away with it? You definitely can get away with it. If you're feeling good and you're hitting it straight, then that's fine. But you have to be aware of all these dangers that lurk. And that's why, for me, I was encouraged to see some of the players hitting shots with three woods as well. And some of them hit two. Like Xander Schauffele hit a couple of shots to see, obviously, which one he liked better. But it's, I think, strategy, philosophy, and how you employ it is going to be absolutely as important as your ball striking.
And a little bit of restraint, if not a lot of restraint, and going with the three wood instead of the driver off the tee. Even though it looks wide open, there's a lot of trouble.
There is a lot of trouble out there. And it's part of what you were talking about with the way this golf course is shaped, the undulations. Those do extend into the fairways. And where that is important is the angles that you're going to get into these greens. This golf course ultimately is going to be defined by those green complexes. And as far as the competition goes, where they place those pins is going to be critically important. I can tell you now it's going to be difficult to get close to the pins on many of these greens.
Let's look at both teams, the European team, the United States team. Matt, a lot of controversy, a lot of question marks about the captain's picks on both sides. Now that they've all come together, the 12 representatives of each team are here, the 12 players. What are your thoughts on, let's start with the American team. Justin Thomas is here. He's had a horrible year. He didn't seem to me to be that confident
in the press. I do a lot of nonverbal reading at these press conferences, and you know, I just didn't think either he was exhausted, and that's another issue. They just flew over Sunday. They came Sunday, and we're here Monday morning. That's not a lot of time jet lag and getting some rest before the whole busy week begins. But what are your thoughts about Justin Thomas being on this team and the overall chemistry of this team?
I think the first thought that I have is I feel bad for Keegan Bradley, who has, you know, won twice in the season that just was. So from that standpoint, it felt like Keegan Bradley deserved a pick. However, the reality of it is you had six positions to qualify, and if you don't qualify, then a captain has the right to do whatever they want. And Zach Johnson wanted Justin Thomas on the team. Justin Thomas has a 6-2-1 record at the Ryder Cup. His President's Cup record is equally and even more impressive at 10-3-2. So from that standpoint, when you look at Justin Thomas, when you look at, for example, Ricky Fowler, who had a win in 8 top 10s on the season that just was, but has an average to bad Ryder Cup record, 3-7-5 in 4 prior Ryder Cups. From that perspective, he picked a couple of players that he thought would make his team stronger because of the chemistry that he wanted as a captain. And the other part of it is, which he told us, was that he went to the players and said, who do you want on this team? And I think that's very much, if you look at someone like Sam Burns and saying, I love that Sam Burns is on the team. Sam Burns is a great putter. Sam Burns won the 23 Dell Technologies match play. So from that standpoint, a captain has a right to do whatever they want, but I certainly understand those that are disappointed, like a Keegan Bradley, who seemed to have done everything he should have done, could have done to deserve a captain's pick, and those who were going to question it. Ultimately, we know what's going to happen. If they win, then he did the right thing. If they don't win, then it's going to be happy hunting ground for everyone to second guess.
Exactly. And you have to wonder how much pressure Justin Thomas is putting on himself based on all the controversy leading up to this pick. And I think it just will affect his confidence personally. Hopefully he can overcome that. He's been in this position a few times before. So the chemistry seems to be more important. Zach Johnson, in his press conference when he announced the captain's picks, talked a lot about, you know, the selection criteria. But to me, this team is about those friendships and that comfort level and that chemistry amongst the guys who play well with the other guys, whether it's Scheffler and Sam Burns, because Sam Burns is putting so well, or whether it's JT and Jordan Spieth, or whether it's Patrick Cantlay and Xander. It's really about the teams and the chemistry amongst those guys.
Yeah, and what Zach has said with this team and his leadership approach to it, which is really interesting, frankly, is that he's really not adopting the pod system, right? That which was introduced by Paul Azinger back in 2008, where you group players in these like mini teams, pods, where it's based upon personalities. And then you have this kind of micro focus, who you eat with, who you hang out with, of your mini team. Instead, what he's trying to do is take that and evolve it onto a macro level. It's not unlike what Stacey Lewis did at the Solheim Cup last week, too. She said she really wasn't using the pod system. What they're trying to do is they're trying to take today's player, and they want to make sure that today's player feels comfortable. That's first and foremost. He talks specifically about how highly emotional this week is, and he wants them to be as comfortable as they possibly can. And if that comfort means that they practice on a schedule that is their own, or they sleep on a schedule that is their own, just trying to make it as easy as they possibly can around all of the demands that is the cauldron of pressure that is a Ryder Cup. Now, granted, they're still going to have their dinners and all the things that they have to do, the galas that I mentioned before, et cetera. But around that, he wants to make it as easy as he possibly can for the players to be able to be who they are. And so he feels like his approach, whilst it's different than what we've seen from Ryder Cup teams for the last, what now, decade and a half, a little bit more than that, it will be interesting to see how it plays itself out from the standpoint of saying empower the players instead of directing them.
Let's look at the European team, Matt. Four rookies as well on the European team. And you have to just, it's an astounding story. Ludwig, the fact that he was playing college golf just, a couple months ago, never played in a major championship, and never would have imagined he'd be on this Ryder Cup team. I think it's a great story.
It's an amazing story. I mean, he just turned professional in June. The young Swede, Ludvig Ugberg, is his official way that his name is pronounced, and it's something I think we're all going to kind of get used to, unless he acquiesces. Because what happens when a player has a difficult name coming to the PGA Tour, we all do our best initially to try to say it correctly, and again, his is Swedish, it's Ugberg, and everyone's calling him Aberg, but then many times the player himself just says, just call me Aberg, it's fine, and we'll just leave it at that. We saw it with Emiliano Grillo, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see over time if that what direction he chooses to go, but the sense is that the direction from a competitive standpoint is that he's a superstar, not only in the making, but already in existence. He seems to be the template for the modern tour pro, from the perspective that, you know, he's a big, tall kid, big, wide shoulders. He looks like he could be an Olympic swimmer, you know, powerful. But he also has this demeanor about him that is incredibly emotionally serene, which will be really interesting to see how it plays itself out when he's actually in the Ryder Cup. But for some reason, this is one of those players that you get a sense that he's not going to be consumed by the moment. He hasn't been so far.
Exactly. Neither is Bob McIntyre. Rory McIlroy, 7th Ryder Cup. He was talking a little bit about, you know, what the leadership role means to him, but he was kind of downplaying it. He said he wanted his teammates not to look up to him as much as just feel more comfortable with him. And he didn't seem like he was taking on this huge mentorship role, which I thought was interesting. He just wants to be one of the guys, and he didn't want the younger players to be in awe of him.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's going to have a choice on that when it all is said and done, because he is Rory McIlroy, you know, a 4-time major champion and a player that has been so outspoken now for over a year in terms of what he thinks is important. And you know, images we have of Rory McIlroy include when he was in tears after the European team was beat soundly. So for so many reasons, I don't think it's going to be easy for him to escape a natural role as a leader. And many times the way that plays itself out is not something that the players are willing to discuss publicly. You know, they will take a public posture that goes, no, it's, you know, all for one and one for all. But in that team room is where they get emotional, and that team room is where they share experiences that aren't for anybody else. It's just for the teams themselves. So I have a feeling that notwithstanding what Rory may have said publicly or what Rory may have said to the press, because if he said anything otherwise, it would be followed up by a whole litany of questions about what his perspective is and what he hopes to impart, et cetera, et cetera. It's a lot easier to go, you know what, I'm just going to take it cool and just ride the wave along with everybody else. But I think in that locker room, that's not who you're going to see. You're going to see the Rory McIlroy that we have seen over the last couple of years, which is a leader.
And how great that Justin Rose made the team, his 6th Ryder Cup, but a nice surprise for Justin, obviously, who came on strong this year, had a wonderful year, having not made the last Ryder Cup team for the Europeans.
You know, I think the European side overall is extremely well-balanced. I think if you went back even 3 or 4 months and you started to look at the qualifying teams on the American side and you started to look at the qualifying teams on the European side, and of course the European side qualifies from two different points lists, the world points and the DP World Tour points, it would be easy to come to the conclusion, and I think many did, that the American side is overwhelmingly favored to win this Ryder Cup. And then all of a sudden, as we started to get to the closing stanza of the season that was in the PGA Tour, because it wrapped up after the Tour Championship proper, then we have the FedEx Cup fall, which of course is new, and then in January 2024, we go back to a calendar year. But having said that, we started to see the emergence of the Victor Hovlands. We've seen solid play from Jon Rahm throughout. Rory, while he may not win as often as we think he should because of the immense talent that he has, he's always there in the top 5 and top 10, and the way he finished over, you were talking about Bob McIntyre, the way that Rory finished out the Scottish Open was amazing. That was like vintage Rory McIlroy. So from that standpoint, if you look at top to bottom at the European team now, I would say, I don't know what the bookies are saying currently, but I would say it's very hard at this point coming into this Ryder Cup to say definitively that one team has an edge, notwithstanding the fact that the Americans put a whooping on them the last time and won by 10 points. Notwithstanding the fact that if you look at the Americans in terms of their world rankings and compare them to the Europeans, you would look at it and go, well, clearly there's an advantage there. But in professional golf, the difference between the guy that's number one or number two, number three, or anywhere in the top 10, and the guy that's number 30 to number 40 or even 50 is so tiny. And that difference tends to vet itself out over the course of a season, over the course of 72 hole events, week after week after week. But when you're talking about the flash that is the Ryder Cup, I don't think there's any difference at all. I really don't think there's an advantage. So this is so much tighter than what anybody believes coming in my view.
All right, I'll put you on the spot, Maddie, as they call you here in Europe and the UK. Can the United States team win the Ryder Cup for the first time in 30 years on foreign soil?
Yes, they can. To answer your question succinctly, yeah, they absolutely can. Because Zach Johnson's been very good, although I think he's tiring of answering the question, I get a sense. But he's very good at saying, look, this team is not the last 30 years. This team is who they are. And this team, by and large, if you look across this team, they don't have the scar tissue that frankly, their leadership has. If you look at Zach Johnson, you look at his vice captains, none of them have winning Ryder Cup records. But the players themselves are all coming off freshly killed meat where they just had a resounding win. If you notice the theme here, and I'm not trying to be accusatory of the media, but if you notice the theme here, everyone's asking them about the fact that they haven't won in Europe in the last 30 years. They just won 2 years ago. So I suspect that back in the team room, that's the theme that's being driven. Don't be distracted by the noise. Understand that you guys are holding the Ryder Cup. It is yours. It belongs to the United States right now. Are you capable of beating these guys? You are. This is a golf course that even though the Italian Open is played here, there is no real distinctive advantage that I can see in terms of the golf course. There is an advantage in terms of setup if the American team chooses not to adjust to it, but they're smart guys. We'll see.
Any closing thoughts before I let you go?
I guess the hard one, and I'd ask you this question too before I go, is invariably in these interviews, we always get asked, who do you think is going to win? And having said everything that I said, my instinct tells me that I think that Europe is going to come away with this one by the slightest of margins for some reason. What do you think?
Interesting. I was going to ask to put you more on the spot by asking you who you thought was going to win. I agree with you. I just have this feeling that the European team, so strong as you pointed out. I just think they're going to win. They're very accustomed to the team format. Well, so is the American team, but they just seem like they're a little more comfortable with it. You even in the practice rounds, you see them going places all together. With the Americans, you know, one by one, they kind of stroll in on their own. You know what I'm saying? Just little nuances like that you notice. And I think that makes a big difference. Are they? Yeah, they're friends and they're very close, the Americans. You know, they do play a lot together. They travel together. But I think the European chemistry and the skill level, and that, don't forget, the European crowds, too. We are in Italy. There are a lot of fans here from Europe, from the UK, who are going to just root on the European team. I think that will make a huge difference. Unfortunately, as much as I'd like the Americans to win, I think the Europeans will. I just think, you know, they have just that slight edge to pull them over the top for the victory.
Yeah, that's my sense, too. I think it's going to be incredibly close, and it could obviously go either way. I don't see it being a runaway by one side or the other. We'll see if we're correct in that regard. But in general, I think your assessment is on the mark that it's hard to play an away game. And what does, even if they win or they don't win from a Team USA perspective, I don't think it's got anything to do with the past 30 years, but does it have to do with the fact that they're away? Yeah. Does it have to do with the fact that these galleries that you're talking about are very much going to be in favor of the home team? Yeah, that's a part of it. It's not as big a part as you think because obviously the European side faces that, and wait till they get to New York when they face that there. But it is a factor to it. I do think that, you know, your sleep schedule is a factor to it. There's a lot of things that go into it, but ultimately it really comes down to the depth of these respective teams. I mean, for example, like Matt Fitzpatrick on the European side, he's 0-5 at a Ryder Cup. He's 0-5. And you look at that and go, how could you look at Matt Fitzpatrick and think that he's going to be, you know, stalwart of this team? But I don't think the Matt Fitzpatrick that went 0-5 is the Matt Fitzpatrick that's here. We've got a Matt Fitzpatrick now that was a major champion at Brookline, which had some holes that are pretty similar to this, not in terms of the wild grasses and that, but just in terms of use of undulations and strategy of execution of shots. So there's a lot of maturity that has taken place. Long-winded answer to a simple question, but that's the reason why I think that Europe has just an ever so slight edge to win this.
Well, as the slogans have said all over the grounds here at Marco Simone, all roads lead to this. So let the games begin, Matt Adams. Always a pleasure to have you on Sports Interview. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. I'm joined by Rory McIlroy from Team Europe. Rory, remarkably, your seventh Ryder Cup.
Thanks, Steve.
It's all right. A lot of team rooms you've been in there. We saw a video last night from Luke talking through the team environment. How's it been being in that environment this week?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I think everyone knows this is a bit of a transitional period for the European team, and there's people that have been a part of the European team for a long time that aren't here this week, but I think the guys that we've brought in are going to be awesome. Nikolai, Ludwig, Bob, that's the future of our team and the future of the Ryder Cup. And I think we came here to Rome a couple of weeks ago for a practice trip, and I thought that was incredibly important, and honestly I couldn't believe that we'd never done it before. It was, we played a practice round and we got familiar with the golf course, but then the sort of time that we spent off the course I thought was great, and just sort of sharing stories around the fire pit and sort of describing our journeys in golf and what the Ryder Cup means to us, and sort of just getting to know one another a little better, even people that I thought that I knew for a long time. Sort of getting to know them a little better too was wonderful. So I think, Luke and his vice captains have really, sort of tapped into this, emotional connection around Team Europe in this week, and we've all bought into it. And, it's been an amazing experience so far, and, it's only Wednesday. There's a lot of great things to come, but, couldn't be more excited to be a part of the team and to have those other 11 guys be my teammates.
Thanks, Rory. We'll open up with Dylan on this mic.
Yeah, Rory, you talk about how different it is just being able to spend this quality time this week. How much quality time do you get to spend with the guys on your team just week in, week out on the PGA Tour or DP Tour? Like, do you go over dinner? Do you get to have long, extended quality time with these guys or not?
With some of them. With some of them I do, and then some live in different places, and it's hard, and then the weeks of tournaments are always so busy, and we're always doing our own things and have our own little teams around us that it's hard to carve out that time. I feel like leading up to Ryder Cups, it's always a bit easier. So, Irish Open and Wentworth the last couple of weeks, spending more time with guys and, making that a priority, has been there. But, yeah, I mean, during the course of the year, I'm probably just as close with a lot of the American guys than I am with the Europeans, just because of the places that I play and the and where I live and sort of who I practice with and who I play with at home. So, but these last few weeks have been really nice to sort of reconnect with some of those guys.
Okay, go right behind to Rick.
Hey, Rory. Just one on fans. The atmosphere obviously makes the Ryder Cup as part of it. You've experienced the odd road fan in the Ryder Cup, and thinking of Brian Harman getting heckled at the Open. Do you just fear that sometimes a tribe isn't mine? Go too far here?
No, because I think that's part of the Ryder Cup. There's not a lot of other instances in the game of golf where that happens. But there's certainly a line. And I think most fans that come out to watch golf are very respectful and they know what that line is. So no, I have no issues about that. And it, yeah, we've all had our fair share of heckles over the years and whatever, and that's a part of it. You know, if you know what someone said to me once, if you want to be part of the circus, you have to put up with the clowns. So
okay, cross to this side. I think Bob first and then Kevin.
There's an idiot that by coming to your suite, I guess, or whatever, they had you read your 2009 quote. At what point did you come to realize that maybe that was off? Was it right away in 2010, or did it take some time where you found, yeah, maybe I misread this?
No, it was definitely that first Ryder Cup. It was probably very early in the week at Celtic Manor. I took a bit of grief for those comments, and rightfully so. But I remember in 2010, in one of the practice rounds, I still had the sort of long curly hair at that point, and a few of the guys on the team came down to the first tee with wigs on and like sort of made a joke of it, And that meant a lot to me. And I think just early in that week, and it's not, look, I said it in that little, you know, video piece I did earlier in the week. It's not as if I didn't play team golf before or knew what it was about. But I think that, you know, in 2009, I was just so focused on myself and trying to get my career off the ground that, you know, I felt like I had sort of bigger and better things to achieve for, you know, my individual goals and stuff like that, that I just didn't, you know, put any emphasis on making a Ryder Cup team until you make one, and then you never want to be off one again. You know, I think that's sort of the crux of it. So I love being a part of this team. My most enjoyable moments in my career have been being a part of European Ryder Cup teams. I'm still very, very proud and probably proudest of the things I've done as an individual, but nothing beats this week. It's an amazing experience, and I want to be a part of it for as long as I can.
I'm delighted to be joined by the USPGA champion, Brooks Koepka, from the US team. Brooks, it's a fourth Ryder Cup appearance for you here. Just give us a sense of what it's like to be back in the team environment and how much you're looking forward to this week.
Yeah, it's fun. I enjoy hanging out with the guys, seeing everybody, and doing all the stuff behind closed doors. It's tough to explain. You just got to be there. But I've enjoyed it. It's been fun. And, you know, we're looking for a good week, I think. This is probably the youngest team I think I've been on, and we've all pretty much played junior golf together growing up, so it's probably the tightest group of guys that we've had, so it'll be interesting to see how it goes this week.
I'm going to start with Mike 2 with Cameron.
Brooks, a lot of speculation on who's going to play with whom on Friday and Saturday. People look at analytics, they look at friendships. What do you think makes up a good two-man team in these things, and do you think it's maybe people are overthinking it? A good team is just a team that sees the ball go in the hole early.
I don't know, it's tough. I think guys that, you can make an argument, guys that have similar games, guys that have different games for either one of those, but at the end of the day, it's two guys are going to go out and go play good. It's simple. Play your best players and who's playing well, and put those guys out and let them go earn points.
Okay, Mike 3 to Shane.
Brooks, when you were in Paris, did I know you knew that fans were going to be cheering against you, but did the way it felt surprise you at all? Was it overwhelming at times? Describe what that was like.
No, I don't think it was overwhelming at all. It was a different week for me than probably most of the other guys. So, I'm curious to see how this one is. I'm excited for it. I enjoy it. I enjoy the silence sometimes.
Mike 1, Kyle.
Yeah, it seems like this team, this era, has a different vibe than 10 years ago. Even Paris, just a different group. Do you attribute that more to captains just saying, "Hey, we're gonna let you do your thing, do your workouts, take your naps throughout the week," or is it more so everybody just being friends and getting along better?
Probably a bit of both. I think they've probably learned from past failures, maybe. So you got to figure out what works. You get a different group of guys each time, so you got to figure out what works for the majority or what works for most. And I think they've done a really good job this week, I think, of letting us be us and do what makes us play well. And I think from when I was on the team in 16, it was very structured. There's a lot more things we had to do off the golf course, but they've definitely toned it back a little bit to let us, because it's honestly probably one of the most tiring weeks with practice rounds, a lot of media, a lot of, you know, functions, different things like that. So it can be late nights, early mornings, and, you know, especially if you're going to go play 36 or whatever the case may be. And then even when you've got the afternoon off or the morning off, you know, to me, I like going to watch some of the guys, so I'll go watch them for 9 holes. So you end up walking a whole lot more than you, I don't want to say anticipate, but than what you normally would. So just trying to rest as much as you can.
Is the group closer knit also, though, than maybe 16? I remember you said this after Whistling Straits. You said it was a lot more fun this year than in years past. And you specifically talking about that group of guys. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, we've been, I think everybody's been pretty close since they've been 15, known about each other. I mean, there's probably who's the youngest guy on the team? Maybe Wyndham, I guess. And I think maybe the oldest might be Brian. So, I mean, what's that, 8 years? So it's everybody's, you know, you grew up playing junior golf with at least six to eight guys on the team. So, you know, traveling, junior golf's the same as any tour, you know, you're traveling the world playing with them and college golf and this and that, so you're always around each other and hanging out. And I think it's definitely a, like I said, different atmosphere than in years past.
Mike, 3, Brentley.
Everybody's got a lot more in common too, you know what I mean, being that pretty much the same age group.
Brooks, where's your energy level at right now? I mean, you just played a tournament, you got a newborn at home, and what's your secret to kind of making sure that you're recharged 100%? Like, do you do anything special maybe that's different than other guys besides just sleep, obviously?
No, same normal stuff. It's a work week, so everything stays the same for me. Nothing changes, whether it's a major, whether it's a regular event, or whether Ryder Cup. No, everything's still the same. Routine's still the same. I mean, I'm ready to go. It's a big event, so I'll be there.
Mike 1, Stevie.
Hi, Brooks. Caddies obviously have a big role this week. Can you just say how important Ricky Elliott is to your team and how important that relationship has been to what you've achieved in the game to date?
Yeah, I think we've been so successful because I don't understand him half the time. So that's probably why we've worked so well together. He's a great dude. He was groomsman in my wedding. He's one of my best friends. We hang out on the golf course, off the golf course. He'll sometimes even pop down to me, or I'll pop up to him in Orlando and just kind of spend the weekend up there hanging with him. It doesn't always need to be golf. It's we're very close, and I think that's translated to success on the golf course. I think the ideal caddy is just knowing what your player is going to do before they even do it. He can sense if I'm tense, if I'm a little too relaxed, if I'm pissed off, if I'm, you know, kind of lackadaisical. He can sense that and kind of get the ball rolling and snap me back into it.
Mike 2, please, with Mark.
Hey, Brooks. I have two unrelated. The first of which is regarding Brian Harmon. I think you're viewed as one of the more mentally tough players out here. And he obviously went through a lot of BS at Liverpool to win that Open Championship this summer. What's your take on him and just, you know, how he's able to, he's been overlooked a lot. He's got a chip on the shoulder a little bit because of that, and he expressed that after the Open Championship.
I love that. I love guys with a chip on their shoulder. I love guys that are very gritty players. That's something, when I first came out, that was who I kind of emulated. I thought, like, to me, growing up, it was, you know, Dustin and then G-Mac. I thought they were both, or, well, G-Mac was especially gritty. I don't want to say he's got to work a little bit harder than everybody else and always finds a way to get it done. And I think Brian's quite similar. I think you can compare those games a little bit. and I just love that. Never gives up, always battling to the end and ready to prove people wrong.
How can that benefit? I mean, that seems like a huge benefit in this forum, is it not?
Yeah, I would say so. I guess you could say, you know people are going to be cheering against you, and I'm sure Brian's ready to hear the silence or not have the crowd cheer. I think that's an added benefit for him, and even when they are cheering, he wants to make them quiet, so it's a little added bonus, and always, like you said, that chip on your shoulder.
We're going to go Mike 3 for Doug.
I just have one quick stupid question about Sam's hair and the hair tattoo and stuff, which is getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, Sam's he's got a nice Kentucky waterfall going. It's pretty solid, although the USA that's inscribed on the side of his head, I don't know if he was doing that looking in a mirror, because it's not, USA doesn't look the best, but it makes it even better, I think. It definitely classes it up a little bit.
Doug on Mike 3.
Two things, Brooke. When you decided to join LIV last year, was the Ryder Cup even on your radar, and was there a point between then and I guess now that it became, in your mind, a possibility?
I mean, I knew it would be tougher, but I think after Augusta, it was kind of, had my eyes on it. Realized, I think after Augusta, I went to maybe 20th, somewhere around there on the points list, and then from there, it was just motivation to get him on the team.
June, like last June, when you joined?
I had a lot of other things going on in my mind. I don't think Ryder Cup was one of them at that particular moment, but I think the closer this got, the more it was definitely in the front of my mind.
And then secondly, if the Ryder Cup, which it hadn't done in a while, came down to one match on the course to decide it, I suspect if you ask all 24 guys here if they want the ball, they'd say yes. How many of them do you think really mean it?
Very few. False confidence, I think. I think other than the Ryder Cup, I think the most pressure you could feel is in a major. I don't know guys should believe in themselves, but I mean, right, everybody else has got to be thinking that they don't. That's why I think that way. I think that's, you got to be thinking you're the best player on the golf course, best player on the team, best player in that current time. And if you don't, then, I mean, there's something wrong with you. You always got to believe you're the best and want to be the best and have that drive, and that's what's going to put you over the edge. And I think a lot of guys have it, but I don't know how many guys would want an 8-footer with this on the line.
Okay, we're going to go Mike 1 right at the back.
Hey, Brooks. Brooks, what is the biggest challenge being in this profession and being a new father?
I haven't experienced it fully yet, missing certain milestones, but I mean, everybody's got to deal with that. So anybody working 9 to 5, still has things they're going to miss when they're away from their kid, first steps, first time saying a word, whatever the case might be. I'm lucky enough. I go away for a week or two, maybe 3 weeks, and then I might be back for a month. So, it all evens out in the scheme of things, but, it would be nice just to be home with them. But at the same time, I want to be here, and I'm excited for this week, and I can enjoy it next week when I'm home.
Staying on that with Neil, just in front.
Yeah, Brooks, hi. Do you think playing the team format in LIV can make you a better Ryder Cup player and teammate in any way? And you playing here this week, do you feel you're representing LIV Golf as well as the USA?
I feel like I'm representing USA. That's what I got in the front of my hat this week. So that's what I'm representing. It's not a group of individuals in that locker room. We're just all one team, and that's the way we think. That's what I believe, and I'm pretty sure everybody else there thinks that. And what was the other question?
Do you think LIV Golf can make you a better Ryder Cup player?
I mean, you're just going to play a round of golf, and then the team scores just add up at the end. I mean, I don't see how that has really any translation to this format. Yeah, you're in a group setting or like a team setting, but other than that, I don't see how it's. We're not playing alternate shot or best ball, I think, until Miami in 3 weeks, and that's just a match play. You can only take care of yourself. So I guess it would be like a Sunday out here.
Okay, Riath on mic three.
Brooks, just coming back to one of Doug's questions there about wanting the ball on Sunday. I'm assuming you count yourself as one of the few who would actually want that. But are you the kind of guy who visualizes who you'd actually like to match up against? Do you want to kind of get that statement win against a Rory McIlroy or a John Rahm early in the order?
I don't know if it'd be like early in the order, late in the order. You know, it's tough, right? The point system can go so many different ways. You know, we have no idea where we're going to be on the Sunday, what order, or at least I don't. I don't think any of the guys have that down yet. But, I mean, you want to play a good player, and you want to, you know, some guys want to play certain people. I'd love to play John, Rory, Vic. I'll play anybody.
Can I just follow as well in terms of the LIV side of it? Because clearly you're conspicuous here as the only LIV golfer.
Didn't notice.
Yeah. In terms of the selection policy, Zach has repeatedly said that all he did was look at the rankings. Now, clearly that doesn't favour the LIV side for the obvious reasons, but Do you feel like the LIV guys got a fair crack of the whip with selection?
I don't make the decisions. It doesn't. Everybody had an opportunity to get there. I mean, I had the same opportunity as every other LIV player, and I'm here. So, play better. It's always the answer.
Okay, final question with Carl.
Going back to what we were talking about earlier, you seem like the type of person that would just say, hey, the camaraderie is what it is. Let's go put the ball in the hole. That's what counts. But it also seems like the camaraderie matters to you. So why does it matter? Why does that, how can that help a team? And specifically, why does it matter to you?
It matters to me because I think, right, it's a lot easier when you know that everyone's got your back. You know, it's like you're playing for more than just yourself when we're teeing it up this week. So when guys are out there, it's a lot. It's always fun looking up and, you know, just throwing names. I'm playing my match and I see Xander following or whatever. It makes you just fight a little bit harder. It's a little bit more fun and you're just trying to show off for those guys too. I think that's some of the fun. But even the stuff that goes on at night, just hanging out with everybody, getting to have different conversations that, I mean, if you're on tour, you might see these guys a lot. I don't get to see them as much anymore, so it's kind of a little bit more special to me. And then the fact of just trying to catch up on life, because, I mean, yeah, you can only talk so much over the phone or text or whatever you're doing with these guys, but at the same time, there's a lot of events that go on just in everyday life, and knowing more about guys you don't know much about, and I think it makes the week a lot easier and kind of takes the, I don't know if I'd call it pressure or stress or all the other stuff that goes on in the week, just kind of helps ease it.
Okay. Brooks, thanks for your time this week.
Thanks.
My thanks to Matt Adams and to the European Tour, who provided the audio from the press conferences. And as Seve Ballesteros once said, and he was perhaps the most fierce Ryder Cup player of all time, helping the European Ryder Cup team to 5 wins as both a player and a captain, he said, I look into eyes, I shake their hand, I pat their back, I wish them luck, but I'm thinking, I'm going to bury you. Great words from the late, great Seve Ballesteros. Be safe, be kind, and I look forward to talking with you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Anne LaGorry.